The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another Kiefer and Curry Show, Left Side. Kip Kiefer, I'm Tony Curry. Of course, if you're from the Birmingham area, anywhere in the Southeast, you probably know who we are already. Over 500 years of experience when it comes to radio and television. Of course, speaking of TV, ABC 3340, we have a show called The Starting Lineup coming up here. We got college football kicking off in just a couple weeks. It's going to be a huge monster show. We're going to have all kinds of plays, free plays. We're going to have a brand new podcast that we're going to be picking some games. Everyone's doing betting podcasts. We were 26-7. In our first year on the television screen. So a lot of people are like, dude, you need to do another show. And I was like, okay, so we'll do another show.
Against the spread, too. We're not just one of those.
No, and I hope I don't have to say ATS because, I mean, if we're picking just who's going to win the game, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, anyone can do that.
But if you watch, though, like game day and they go across the table and they have their guest picker, they're just picking who's going to win or lose. Big deal.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying that sometimes, you know, I like a Kirk Herbstreit who I like. Reese Davis, I like a lot of those guys. And when they, you don't see Kirk Herbstreit, but about 3 or 4 months a year, okay, on ESPN. He gets paid millions and millions of dollars because he is the college football analyst, okay? And I get that, and that's how they work. You know, you see Paul Feinbaum every single day because he does a radio show, but then you see him a lot more during college football. And then during baseball season, you see you have your baseball analyst on ESPN that you only see during baseball season. You don't see them in February, March, because there's no reason to have them on February, March. And they'll say, who do you like? And now more than ever, I guess they're picking against the spread if you watch SVP. And these guys study, watch film, and it's all they do is college football 24 hours a day, all right? And you would think that someone that is so well steeped in their sport would have a little bit more knowledge about picking and handicapping ball games, but there's so much more to it than just, you know, the matchups. The idea of a matchup is people just don't get it because on paper, you look on paper and a Jenny Joe Schmo and go, well, listen, on paper, this team looks a lot better than this team. They should win by 20. And I mean, that'll be the Schmo that walks into Vegas and drops $500 on a, well, this team should beat the hell out of them, you know? So they're going to win by 40 and they end up doing it. And of course, that's all you hear about is they're right on their bet. I'm like, well, how'd you do in the last 100 bets? Okay. So we are very, very forth honest. We are very free with our picks. We do have a reason why we do that. There are some times where, you know, you get, you know, the blind squirrel finds the nut. Okay. There are some times where if one team played another team 10 times, they would beat them 8 out of 10 times and go 8-2 against ATS. You may be that one time where you got one of those two plays and you nailed it right. Good for you. That's a win's a win. I don't care how you find it. I don't know how you get it. You could be like picking corns off your toes and going, okay, that's a W. That's an over. That's an under. You could be picking petals off a rose. I don't care how you do. Just give me winners. And that's what we do on our show. That's all I'm saying.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying. So we'll break down some film. We'll look at some things. Kai Gregory is also going to be joining us for the show. So we'll look forward to that. Olympics over. We're doing the show on a Monday. Ended last night. I actually watched the Peacock Network, so I was watching some of it live. They were a good 6-7 hours ahead of us. Your overall thoughts on the Olympics? Any surprises? U.S. men's basketball team looked pretty good. A nice scary game against Serbia, but end up having Curry's unbelievable. LeBron James is unbelievable. I mean, he's LeBron James at 39 years of age. And I will say this right now. I still think he's the best basketball player that we've ever seen. I realized that I was 15, 16, 17 years old when Jordan was playing, when he was really hot in the mid to late 80s. For what he does and the way he acknowledges game, I mean, he went, 14, 10, and 6 in the gold medal game against France. And it was the best 10, 14, 6 ever seen, or 14, 10, 6 I've ever seen. I mean, the guy is such a huge part of the game. He doesn't have to score 20 points a ball game, and he realizes that. He's just a great interpreter of the game. He's a great leader on the game. And because of that, you had, Steph Curry making 4 3-pointers in 2 minutes and 11 seconds, which is almost impossible to do. But yeah, just an amazing game and good stuff. But your overall view on the Olympics, did you like it? Did you enjoy it?
Well, on the basketball thread, it amazes me that LeBron has always been such a polarizing character and has so many detractors. I never have really understood that.
Don't get it.
I know that a lot of that is fueled by people that are absolutely adamant that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time, and how dare anybody put LeBron in that same category. But for longevity, Tony, at 39, what he's still able to do is unbelievable. And let's go ahead and give credit where credit's due. This Olympic team was pretty much the product of LeBron James getting out early in the season, in the NBA season, and talking up everybody getting on involved in this Olympic effort. We got to go over there and win the gold medal, because LeBron recognizes, as so many of the other guys do, and anybody who watches the game does, that the world has pretty much caught up. You look at just 10 or 12 years ago, the percentage of foreign players in the NBA was something like, it was like less than 10%. It was 7 or 8%. Now it's almost 40%.
Yep.
I mean, the world has gotten basketball insane. Like our partner on TV says, not sports insane, basketball insane. All corners of the globe have competitive teams. Look at that French team yesterday. Those guys were huge, Tony. I mean, this kid went an hour or whatever from, they played for the Spurs. This kid is 7'6" and can do everything. Yep. I mean, LeBron recognized this is going to be probably his last dance at the Olympics. He said, you know, I'm not going out a loser, but we're going to have to put together a hell of a team to win this thing. They beat the Serbs easily in the very first game, but they got pushed to the limits. They were down 17 in that game, Tony.
Crazy.
Came back and won it because all the big players that maybe even were on the shelf of playing, the Kevin Durant's, and of course Steph was all in, because he's somehow, Steph Curry has never played in the Olympics with due to injury. I mean, that's amazing. So, I mean, for him to be, and if there's ever any doubt, this is the greatest clutch player. Michael Jordan always had that title, but now Steph Curry's intruding on that territory as well. Because like you said, France twice got to within five. With 2 minutes left, they had gotten within three, and just cold-blooded Curry come down and just making threes from everywhere. And that last one he made to stabilize the game for the Americans. I mean, there were like three guys on him, and I was sitting here with my son watching, and he goes, he put up for another one. And Clay said, no way.
No.
Boom.
No.
Splash. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. So, and I tell you what too, and if anybody who listens to my other program on your network, which I'm so privileged to be able to do and give my thoughts every week on Need to Know. Everybody knows that I am all about the USA, all about the red, white, and blue. Love my country. Love everything that that it stands for. It gave me so much enjoyment to watch every player on that team drape themselves in the American flag yesterday and celebrate that victory. They were proud to represent their country, and they knew what a significant, defeat it would have been if they didn't come home with gold. And for those guys to demonstrate, where it's not fashionable these days, to espouse, love of your country or acknowledge even your country, those guys really, really scored big with me celebrating in that fashion.
You know, it's one thing to acknowledge your country and to be patriotic when you're in it. And it's another thing to be acknowledgeable and patriotic about your country when you're out of it. And what I mean by that, and I'll be interested, because it's been since 1996 that we've had the Olympics in the United States. Of course, they're going to LA in 28.
Right.
The torch has been passed, literally. There is... And I've been to four Olympics, okay? So, I mean, I obviously didn't compete, but I covered four different Olympics for the Coca-Cola Network, and so I've been there, done that. And I'm just telling you, I went to Atlanta, but I also went to Lillehammer, I went to Barcelona, I went to Albertville, France. And when your team does really well on some, it's like winning an away game. I mean, it's like going into someone else's country, but you're doing it 120 times over. It's really hard to describe. It really is. And I mean, I could see where, you know, you may be standing on the pulpits in the Coliseum in 2028 in the United States, the national anthem may be playing and you may not shed a tear, but yet 4 years earlier, you may have been over there just getting out of the Sin River and you're just, and not from the acidic or the stuff burning your eyes, but you're actually crying because you're hearing the national anthem. It's just a different thing when you're playing your national anthem in a faraway place because you are the best. The one thing
how about that crowd yesterday in Paris? Yeah. I mean, you talk about winning in hostile territory. That was this revved up a crowd, and they never, the reason the French had such resilience, I'm convinced, in that game is because the crowd was just willing them to hang in there and keep fighting. And they got to within three there with 2 minutes to go. I thought the American team was in real trouble. Thank God Steph Curry did not have that opinion.
Well, and you know what? I mean, I love it. I mean, I know most people that watch Alabama Auburn football.
It made it all that much better.
I've thrown this question out, and I didn't understand it when I first moved here. But you know, first of all, are you an Auburn, Alabama? And then you answer that question, and then I always thought, you know, would you rather see your team win by 40 every week, or would you rather see your team win every week by two or three, or occasionally have that game that's tough? And most people here would say, beat the shit out of them by 30 every week. Every week, I want to see him beat the hell out of 40 points. And I mean, I don't find that enjoyable to watch. I don't find it fun to watch a team get beat by 40 in Olympic style basketball. Obviously, I want the Americans to win, and I want the United States to win and everything. But yeah, that is nice to see Serbia give them a push and France give them a push. You know, if anything, it seemed like it's a little fixed. I mean, you knocked out Serbia by 35, and all of a sudden you're losing by 17. I mean, how's that possible? How is that possible when you're playing the same exact game? Don't tell me we don't know how to handicap. I'm sitting there watching and I'm going, what in the world is going on here with this basketball team? Are they going to lose this game after they just beat them by 30? That's what makes it so much fun. And I'm glad the rest of the world is coming up. I don't know if the rest of the world's coming up or we're coming down or a little bit of both. The one thing that I really acknowledged a lot of this time, and I watched more Olympics this time than I probably did when I actually went to four different Olympics. My son loves the Olympics and he loves watching everything,
which is awesome.
And he thought the breakdancing thing was super cool. I did too. He loves the skating. He likes the X Games. He's into that kind of stuff. And, I was really surprised by how passionate and how emotional, how many athletes got after winning bronze medals as opposed to gold and silver. And it's something that I had not seen. I saw several places. I even was watching some fencing and I saw these people and they were so excited. They were so happy that they had won a medal, period. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, we're taught in this land, you know, coming first or forget it. You never remember who wins the silver or bronze medal. You remember who wins the gold medal, right? You never remember who loses the Super Bowl. You always remember the winner. That's what we're taught in this country. You win or you're nothing. You're second best. It's so cool to acknowledge a game where not every kid has to get a trophy, but you can come in third. And for that person, that's as good as, I get goosebumps right now. That's as good as coming in first in anything else in life. I mean, it is so cool to see these people that are so happy with a third place win. We just don't see that in our culture here. We have to win or it means nothing.
You work all your life to get there and you're competing against the very best in the world. And to get a bronze medal in almost any sport, it's not a participation trophy. That signals to me you're the third best at this pursuit in the world. I mean, that's pretty awesome from the standpoint of all the hours, all the preparation, all the sacrifices paying off, especially when you just know that you've got to go there and be your very best. If you're kind of considered in that kind of middle group, you know, usually you already know going into the Olympics who is favored and who has been dominant, and you kind of know who the top tier guys or girls are in a particular sport. But if you're a guy who's maybe given his best performance of his life and gets acknowledged for for it on the biggest stage, I would relish that too. And I think you make a great point that to those people, just getting that medal put around their neck is just as significant as if they'd won the whole competition.
That's why what happened in women's gymnastics was so mind-blowing to me. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. You're talking about Jordan Chiles, who qualified third in the women's floor exercise, competed last in the 8 women final, where the order was determined randomly in advance. She finished her routine, awarded a 13.666, which was good for 5th behind our Barbosa and Voyana, which is a 13.7. Cecile Landy, who is Chiles' personal coach and also served as coach of Team USA in Paris, appealed to the judges to have an element restored to Chiles' routine. It happened right after she was awarded the 5th place. And of course, the other girl who was so excited, crying, she was so happy that she got a bronze medal.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you know, Chiles didn't win the bronze, but at least this one. She was so happy. She was in tears. She was hugging her coach, hugging her boyfriend, who was her husband. I don't know who it was. She was so excited. Then 2 minutes later, judges come out and approve the appeal, boosting Chiles' score by 0.1, good enough for Chiles to earn the 3rd place. To go along with the team silver she won in Tokyo in 2021 and the team gold she helped the U.S. capture in Paris. And all of a sudden, you see Chiles, who thought she came in 5th, winning that bronze medal that we alluded to, that so many people seem to be so happy winning the bronze medal. She is going crazy. She's, of course, with Simone and her whole group, and they're like, yes, and they're high-fiving. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this woman who just took her life to win that bronze. By the way, it was her only bronze medal. That was the only medal that woman who came in 3rd had won. To take her bronze medal away from her, to give it back to Jordan, I was like, I almost didn't want to see how she reacted to it. They showed her. She's obviously, she just had the best, greatest thing ever awarded to her ripped out of her hands. And literally. Then the Romanian Gymnastics Federation asked CAS to review the procedures surrounding Landy's appeal of Chiles' score. International Gymnastics Federation, FIG, guidelines require coaches to make any appeal score within 1 minute of the score being posted. The appeal was granted and given at 1 minute and 4 seconds. She was 4 seconds late. They took Jordan Chiles' bronze medal back away from her, or they're going to. That she still has it, by the way. She's now in the United States. She has the medal, and they're asking her to give it back. She's got to give it back.
I haven't heard this edition of the story.
Oh yeah, she's got to give it back. So the woman who originally wins the bronze is being awarded the 3rd place again. So she gets the bronze medal, and Jordan Chiles, who thought she came in 5th, came in 3rd. Now she did come in 5th because of the appeal was 4 seconds
late. 4 seconds late.
4 seconds late. It's just unbelievable. And of course, a lot of people saying now, you know, what's going to happen next? Can the U.S. appeal? The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee says it's planned to try, but it's unclear what the exact process would be. Two potential places the USOPC could take the appeal would be to Switzerland's highest court, the Swiss Tribunal, or the European Court of Human Rights. Do you want to appeal to that?
Good grief.
The initial error occurred in the 6th scoring of FIG, and the second error was during the CAS appeal process where the USOPC was not given adequate time or notice to effectively challenge the decision. So because she was 4 seconds late in the appeal, so not only did she win the bronze, she had the bronze ripped away from her, and now she's getting bronze back. So not only did you piss off and change the dreams of one woman, now you've done it to 2 women. Now you've done it to 2 different individuals. I see that, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be world sports. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, what would be the most important thing that Kip Kiefer could win in his life?
To work all your life.
Could you be the Hall of Fame of broadcasters?
Yeah, I guess.
What's the other thing? You mentioned this on the show that there was something that you had won with the paramutual.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably considered a candidate for the for a sport that's basically obsolete now, but they're continuing to try to soldier on. Probably a candidate for the Greyhound Racing Hall of Fame in Abilene, Kansas.
Absolutely,
which would be a big honor since I've devoted a lot of my life to that sport, and my family was involved in a lot of different things. But yeah, I mean, if I was given that honor, and then somebody called me a half hour later,
just said, joking, yeah, just kidding.
Yeah, you know, we've been looking at that, and we're you're out on a technicality or something. But this is just typical. The International Olympic Committee and all of this, all of these different sanctioning bodies of all these sports. Have been guilty of everything from blatant indifference and not adhering to the rules to outright corruption. There's been a lot of scandal over the years. I mean, it's become a societal thing when you say, well, the Russian judge only gave me a 7.3. I mean, that comes from Olympic bullcrap.
That's real, man. That is real. When you watch and see how many U.S. judges there are and how many Russian judges they are and how they judge each other, don't tell me there isn't some type of corruption there. It's amazing. Oh,
it's still prevalent. Yeah. And you know, the Olympic movement themselves, all of that came out in the World Cup too for soccer. All of it's come out how much these officials get bribed and how they get flown all over the world and stay in 5-star hotels and all these cities and different people that want to sponsor it and become the venues. I mean, this is corrupt from the top down, but when it affects, you know, a young athlete, when they tell her she's won the bronze medal and then they take it away from her, even giving it back now, it's like, you know, I don't care anymore. You know, Tony, I'm a common sense guy. I'm a logical thinker. Mm-hmm. Even though that 0.1 correction was justified, why didn't at the time they just give both those girls a bronze medal? The one girl was already awarded. You don't take it away from her because of this further review. I don't think that would have harmed anybody or changed the course of the world to say, hey, we already declared you the bronze medal winner, so you're getting one too. Why just put two bronze medals around, one on each girl's neck? I
agree with you. And some people have talked about that. And I'm going to push to the right, the knuckleheads who would say, well, there can only be three medals. This is the Olympics and there's gotta be a first, second, or third. Unless there's a tie, there should not be blah, blah, blah. And then we saw ties. We've seen two thirds giving away two silvers and two golds. I agree with you. My element here is if you are one of those people that if you were the gal who won the medal originally and you knew that because of the appeal, you actually didn't come in third, would you want to keep it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, I don't know what that answer is. I don't know her. I don't know her. I know that if I came in fourth in a race, and my partner, my coach, whoever appeals, and I end up coming in third because of some type of inadequate opposing of score, whatever. And I know that I really didn't win. I actually came in fourth, but because of the appeal, this person in front of me, I don't know if I'd want the medal. It'd be really difficult. And I'm sure she's probably going to get a lot of opportunities to interviews, to be on television, say, how does it feel to come in fifth, yeah. Actually come in fifth. Cause there was a tie for third. How's it feel to actually not be the goal? But she won't have to answer that question anymore because she got her bronze back. She's getting her bronze. But I mean, you know, Jordan Child's going to be asked that question. For some reason, I really don't care about Jordan Child's because she's already won a silver and she's already won a gold. She did that with her team. Not to say that I want to see everybody be a winner, but I want to see everybody be a winner. I mean, you spend 4 years of your life, 8 years of your life or whatever to become an Olympic. Just to become an Olympic athlete is amazing enough. Just to get the invite to be on the team is enough for many people. And then to bronze it, to silver it, to gold it, have it taken away, get it back, and then have it taken away again. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I guess the other thing that these Olympics will be remembered for, Tony, is the controversy in women's boxing. The two weight class finalists were both the XY chromosome people they allowed to compete. And I was really up in arms about this when it first hit, because I thought this was the transitioning male business. This was another trans story like the swimmers that were banned from the Olympics this time that were still biologically, we're always biologically males, but have had some alteration. But for this to be prevalent in boxing, but this situation is really complicated because these are people that were actually born with both chromosome mixes. So technically they look like females. They have, they don't have male genitalia like these trans guys, but they have and have been barred from other international competitions because they have the Y chromosome in their mix somehow. It's some kind of there's a name for the condition. So these are really females that have male testosterone and other things. So they're really a difficult category to define. And you don't want to penalize these athletes for what they were born as, because this is a little bit more gray area than what we typically deal with in this issue. But the fact of the matter is, the first girl from Italy quit after 38 seconds when she was getting battered by this guy, gal, whatever he or she was, and these guys just went through the tournament and end up fighting for the gold medal. I mean, there's a lot of sticky things now, but that was really interesting to me. That, you know, I've known a lot of real manly women and vice versa, but there's actually a condition where you don't get you're an XX, of course. You're a female. If you're XY, you're a male. But these are like XXYs, mm-hmm. And that's really something that people are going to have to really give us some thought to, because in other sports where it's like track and field or you know, lacrosse or some kind of team sport, but in boxing, if you have physical attributes that make you superior, you should not be allowed to compete, in my opinion. And again, I hate to shut anybody out because it's not their fault, but when you can do damage to somebody and inflict physical harm, like in boxing, there should be no parameters for anybody other than an actual female to compete.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of joked about this. Maybe we should have the transvestite games. Maybe we should have the plural games, and we don't have enough athletes, obviously, to make that happen. And I agree with you. They should be given an opportunity to compete
somewhere.
And if you don't acknowledge yourself as female or male, and through your life, you're just kind of picking which side you want to be on that particular minute or that note. In sports, I want to be female. When my dating, I want to be male. I want to, that is your perusal. You do that. This reminds me a little bit of, do you remember the world's tallest man? I saw something on TV the other night, the world's tallest guy. And he had some overgrowth hormone in his thyroid or something like that. Anyway, when he was 13 years old, he was 6'9". Okay. Jeez. And he ended up being, I think, 7'11". And he died ironically from some type of weird disease in his knees, because of the growth, our bones aren't situated enough. Our bones aren't situated enough to carry that much weight. But he lived a good life. He had to stand up in school. His last 6 years, he went to school because all the desks were too small. He ended up getting, I want to say he got a doctorate degree. He was a good looking guy, kid, whatever he was, but yeah. So he's on the 13th grade or the 13 year old basketball team and doesn't have to jump to dunk the basketball. The kids are just throwing it up to him. And obviously he's a good 2 or 3 feet taller than everyone else on the floor.
Yeah.
And he's just catching the ball and just dropping
in
the basket.
Florida's got a recruit coming in this year that's supposedly 7'8" or 7'9".
Yeah.
So wow.
Yeah. So, you know, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, in the NBA, guys can jump. I mean, you can see 5'6" guys dunk basketballs. They can get up. I mean, they can actually block. They can actually get up after it gets a 7 foot guy. And when you're 13 years old, you don't have that, you don't have those physical abilities to be jumping up I'm blocking a 6'11". And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, should this kid not be able to play? Or, and we see it in Little League. We see it a lot. You know, where I had a kid down the street who he worked out, but not as much as he probably should have. But he was just a really big kid. In about fourth grade, he was over 200 pounds. He just had big bones. He wasn't fat. He was just a really big kid. And of course, he wanted to play running back or quarterback like that. He just wanted to put him on the line. You know, just put him on the line. He played an offense and defensive line. He was a two-way guy. And just plowed over everyone he went after. You know, you're playing defense, put your arms out, you're playing offense, go forward. You know, and that's all he did. And he killed people. He killed these small kids. He laid on top of these kids.
Just, I mean, in that case, you really, your only option is to make that kid play up a level because you can't physically jeopardize the regular size kids by having some behemoth in the league.
Well, can you for a period of time? I mean, can you for a, sometimes the world's a mysterious place. God's a mysterious person. There's mysteries in the world. And sometimes we want answers for everything. And sometimes we just can't come up with the right answer because both sides are going to lose and you just can't do it. And so maybe I'm just throwing the question out. Maybe it just ain't your time. Maybe it's just not your sitting. If you're a person that has fought your entire life, and we saw this in the Ivy League with the swimmer, right? Where these women were swimming for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of their life and winning every race that ever did until they meet this woman who used to be a man. And next thing they're getting smoked by 3 seconds. And they're like, what have I been training for? I mean, I have feelings for both those. Should we have a special race for these individuals? I don't know if there's not enough of them to have a special race.
This guy still with his junk right around in the women's locker room. I mean, I'm not in favor of all this stuff because I want to discriminate against anybody, but some things are just you have to take sensibility into the equation. Yeah. And that's just not sensible.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's something the IOC will have to take a look at. And again, you know, every year they're probably hoping that they don't have individuals that, you know,
but I'll tell you a quick story as we start to wind down here. I went to my 20 year reunion for high school, back whenever that was. And a lot of people were milling around that I hadn't seen, of course, forever. Everybody's wearing their name tag. This guy walks up to me, kind of an average size guy. And, you know, I was a little bit taller and huskier, but he shook my hand and I had a confused look on my face. I happened to glance down and see his name tag. This was a guy, Tony, when in fourth or fifth grade, we were going to elementary school. He was already like fully grown. It's like he had a wife and kids and was shaven. I mean, he was the dominant athlete in all through high school too, because he was always just so physically ahead of where everybody else was. And he got a scholarship and went to play at some university and tore up his knee. But this guy was the superstar athlete. And now he was kind of a lesser, I mean, I won't say shriveled up in his 40s, but I mean, he was not imposing at all. And when I saw his name tag, I had to do a double take and like, oh, you're Ken. I can't. Great to see you. But I walked away with my jaw dropped. I can't believe, you know, that he reached his peak at like 17 and he's declining like he's a 70 year old man now.
I thought you were going to tell me you turned into a woman. I was like, oh no, please.
I don't have it. Not quite that good a story, but, yeah. But the fact is, I think some of these people that, you know, you met my friend Mark Random from Atlanta. He was another guy who was like fully mature at 13 or 14, and he got grayer a lot faster than all of us did. And Mark's still a really good athlete. He's a tremendous golfer. He had his knee repaired recently. But Mark was another guy who matured really, really early, and he's not as extreme a case because he's still doing really well now at basically my age. But, you know, it's funny how that works, and it makes it difficult in athletic competitions where, you know, those guys can actually hurt somebody, and it's something that I don't think's ever been adequately addressed.
No, I mean, there's no reason. I mean, you take a big, tall guy and a big, tall woman, they're going to have big, tall kids. Is that fair? I don't know. I mean,
usually how it works.
I mean, I'm 6'4". My wife was 5'9". My daughter's probably going to be 5'9", 5'10". She runs like a gazelle. My uncle was 7'3". His wife was 4'11". My uncle Carl and Aunt Jeannie, when he walked up to her, his chest came up to the top of her head. So that's probably why they got married in the first place. She did have a flat head, but she was a great woman. They had two daughters who were 6'10", and they had a son that was 7'4".
Holy cow.
But they were uncoordinated. My 7'4" cousin couldn't play basketball.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I mean, he owned a bunch of car washes up in the Cincinnati area. So yeah. I mean, are we trying to?
I watch a lot of horse racing, as you know. The premier commentator on the Fox Sports horse racing team is Lafitte Pincai Jr. Now, Lafitte Pincai Jr. is the son of Hall of Fame jockey from the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. Lafitte Pincai, who was just a fantastic, won a bunch of Triple Crown races and derbies, one of the best jockeys ever. You know, Lafitte Pincai was whatever, jockeys are, 5 foot, maybe 4'8", weighed 110 pounds. Lafitte Pincai, his son, is like 6'3". it's so funny every time this is Lafitte Pincai, and you look at him and say, that can't be. That's insane. His mother must have been like an Amazon. She must have been like a 6'8" female or something.
It happens,
so you never know with chromosomes and everything we deal with. There are a lot of aberrant things that go on in that process. And who are we to understand that? I'll also point out that when you and I are on TV and I watch the show, I said, God, Tony looks like he's a 7-footer. And I feel like I am. I'm the original Lafitte Pincai. I'm just a little squatty guy sitting next to you.
No, sometimes I'm on with Josh Claypo and he makes me sit back a foot. So we look a little more closer together. And I'm like, come on, man, because he's not the tallest guy. But,
Still made phone books, I could bring one in and sit on one. But unfortunately, they don't make those anymore.
Speaking of TV, we'll do it again. ABC 33, 40, 10, 30, 11 o'clock. It's called The Starting Lineup. A fantastic show. We have a special guest this week. Right.
Chip Blake, who's an Auburn graduate, big booster, probably the top political consultant in all of Georgia. But Chip's a really interesting guy, loves his Auburn Tigers. He can't wait to go one-on-one with the legend in the Legend Cave, which is going to be great. And Tony, for anybody locally here in Birmingham or wherever you're listening, if you're inclined to come, join us this Thursday, the 15th of August. We're going to be at the one of our new sponsors, the Glass Panda, which is a fabulous new restaurant with just an amazing, really innovative menu. It's a really cool place for special events. They're going to host a happy hour kickoff party for the starting lineup this Thursday. We want everybody to come and represent and just come have a great time. Come meet Tony and I. The legend will be there. We're going to have a great time on Thursday, 5 o'clock, the Glass Panda in the Brox Gap Shopping Center. You can get all the information at GlassPandaEats, EATS.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, my friend. Till next week.
Yep, we'll be back again, Kiefer and Curry, right here on the TKR Network.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.